I'm Goldie Sayers, Olympian and former javelin thrower. And welcome back to Insider, the podcast from the UK Sports Institute that lifts the lid on the science behind peak performance. Whether you're an elite sports person looking for advice, a coach seeking to learn more, or you're a weekend warrior who just wants to understand what's happening to your body, we've got a podcast for you. This series, we're focusing on one particular topic, female athlete health. If you missed our last episode all about the perimenopause, do give that episode a listen, because whatever stage of life you're at, you'll find helpful tips for you or those around you. And as we continue to shine a light on performance and female athletes, today's episode is all about periods. For most athletes who menstruate, it's an issue that can affect us every 28-ish days or so. And so it's time to talk about it. And joining me to do just that is Dr. Anita Biswas, Head of Sports Medicine at the UK Sports Institute and an expert in female athlete health and performance. You were with us for our first episode in this series about the perimenopause, so it's a welcome back to you, Anita.
Hello, Goldie.
And alongside Anita is Dr. Richard Burden, Senior Physiologist and Co-Lead for Female Athlete Health at the UKSI, who works alongside Anita. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Goldie.
So we'll start with you, Anita. You've worked with Olympic and Paralympic sports people. You're the lead physician for the Wimbledon Tennis Championship, so you must have worked with countless female athletes. But how often would you say you find yourself talking about athletes' menstrual cycles? Is it more common nowadays to be talking about it than it was? And do you find yourself talking a lot with female athletes about it?
Yeah, so it's a good question, Goldie. As a doctor, we probably talk to athletes about their menstrual cycles more than others, more than other disciplines, but we tend to talk to them when there is a problem and they come to us. And certainly historically, an athlete who was having problems around their menstrual cycle might present to the doctor, and then we would have very open conversations. And I've always been totally comfortable talking about menstrual cycles. One of the challenges we've had in elite sport is that we don't necessarily know that the athletes are having issues, and we maybe don't identify the issues early enough, because it's only when they come to the doctor that the doctor's aware. So what we've been trying to do over the last few years is encourage better conversations, better openness for athletes to feel more comfortable talking about their menstrual cycles, and educating coaches and support staff so that they're more aware and more observant around the behaviours and the challenges that athletes are experiencing. From the point of view of younger girls, not that long ago, I did a webinar with my old school, and I was really, really encouraged by how open the girls were talking about their period and the impact that has on them in their sport. And they were really surprised that elite athletes might not talk about it. But I still think there's lots of young girls that wouldn't talk about their periods with anybody, except for their mothers probably and their friends.
And you said that obviously athletes coming to you with issues. What are the main or the most common issues that athletes present with around their period?
So by the time they get to the doctor, often it can be around very heavy periods. So not just periods that they can manage, but periods that they can't manage. So they might be soaking through their sanitary products. They might be having severe cramps, or they may have had no periods for a period of time. And often they wait to go to the doctor until their symptoms are very severe. But actually, as we start asking the questions of athletes beforehand, we can often find that they may have milder symptoms. So it may not be extremely heavy bleeding, but it's still impacting their performance. It may not be terrible period pain that's making them faint, but it's still enough, like a dull toothache, to, you know, raise alerts to them whilst they're trying to concentrate on their race or their game. So we're encouraging them to come to talk to us earlier. The other thing that we're seeing increasingly is athletes who are pregnant.
Okay.
Which 10, 15 years ago was unusual. It wasn't rare. It did not happen. But now we're seeing more athletes feeling like a career in sport can be compatible with having a family as well.
Correct.
Which is really good.
Yeah. And Richard, you've worked with obviously some of the best UK athletes, and you do a lot of research in particular around cycles and looking particularly at the technology that can be applied to aid the understanding of the impact on performance. But is this research, would you say, quite a recent thing?
No, actually. You know, we have really good academic colleagues of ours who, you know, support the work that we're doing, who have been researching female health, the influence of the menstrual cycle and ovarian hormones. They've been researching those areas their entire careers. You know, so if you were to talk to them, they would say, you've got to stop saying that this is a new thing, because we've been doing it for 30 years. The challenge, though, I guess, is that there aren't enough of those people doing that research. So whilst there are a handful of researchers that have been doing it for a really long time, there just isn't enough. So the breadth and the depth and the quality of the research, like, historically kind of hasn't been there. But, you know, we're pleased to see now that there is an exponential increase in the amount of research that is focusing specifically on female athletes, and the influence that female specific biology and physiology has on health and performance. From a technology point of view, yeah, that's relatively new. Like, femtech is kind of exploding everywhere. There's lots of things out there. There are various different tracking apps that, you know, seemingly are released every month. So relatively speaking, the tech side of what we're talking about is relatively new. The challenge that we have now is to ensure that the research is combined with technology in a way in which it actually makes a difference to the athletes on the ground. So it adds value to their kind of daily lives and their day-to-day training and performance. So we're not just doing things that are interesting or look cool and flashy. We're kind of doing things that are actually making a difference.
And obviously, as listeners may be able to hear and that I can see, you are a kind of young, strapping man. So why, particularly, if you don't mind me asking?
Thanks for the young.
Yeah, I know. I thought I'd add that one in there.
Thanks.
People won't know. They can't see you. So we'll say young. So why particularly female health for you, being a man, if you don't mind me asking?
That's a good question, and I do get asked it a lot, and it's a bit of a long story, but I did my PhD in iron deficiency and endurance athletes, and although iron deficiency isn't a female specific challenge, you know, it happens a lot and you see it a lot in male athletes too, but it is more prevalent in females, and so I guess it started there, and then when I joined UKSI kind of 8 or so years ago, and I teamed up with Anita, and there was not a lot happening, and it was clear that we needed to do more, and there were just gaps everywhere in the knowledge that we had, the kind of the people that were prepared to kind of start doing this type of work. And, you know, like in any area of performance and, you know, elite training and athlete health, if you see a gap, like you need to support it, you need to provide solutions for it, and so that's all it is for me. It was, yeah, it kind of started with academic work that I did a while ago, but now it's just turned into something that it's clear and it's obvious that we need, you know, we need to do better in, and that's kind of what Anita and I have been doing for the last 8 years.
I think it's really important that men are involved in this work. This isn't a female problem. Menstrual cycles are not a female issue. If you're coaching, if you're a man coaching a female athlete, it's also your issue. It's for you to understand. And if we keep it just only women do women's research and only women talk about periods and only women are interested, then only women will see it as a problem. And actually, it's the problem is the science isn't there, and a significant number of our scientists are male. So we need more men to be interested and be involved, because they will be able to make their names, because it's such a growing area.
Yeah, and I whenever I talk about this, I caveat it all the time with, particularly, you know, when we're talking about periods today, or, you know, it could be menstrual cycles, and I'm very, very aware that the things that I'm saying are coming from a bloke, like you said, a young, very strapping bloke. And like, I've never had a period. I'll never have a period. I've never experienced a menstrual cycle, never will. But what I have experienced is I've experienced the science. I've experienced athletes talking about it, having conversations with athletes, observing, listening. I can still add to the conversation. And I guess, as a, just like Anita said, I can also, for want of a better phrase, kind of role model how males should kind of carry themselves in these conversations and how to approach it and just kind of show that it doesn't need to be something that males should be scared of.
I think there's another point around that, that you don't actually have to have experienced a period to understand how it might impact, because there's women out there for whom their periods have very little impact on their ability to perform. So we need them to understand that just because their periods don't impact, that doesn't mean another athlete's periods won't impact. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether you've had a period, no period, a really bad period, or just periods that happen that you can completely manage. We all still need to understand that some athletes are affected by their period, and therefore we should all be trying to find ways to help them and support them.
Absolutely.
But, you know, counter to that, they need to recognize, we need to be recognizing that periods aren't always a negative. We can be using that in a positive way, understanding the individual athlete and understanding how the menstrual cycle affects their ability to do various things that they need to do, and try and optimize that rather than always seeing it as a bad thing.
Okay. And so just to take us back to the beginning, and talking biologically about periods, Anita, what exactly is a period biologically and what is it not? So perhaps what a natural, in inverted commas, period versus a period on a kind of hormonal contraceptive pill, for example, how they differ and what they are and what they're not.
Yeah. So very simply, a period is a representation of a change in the cycling hormones in a female. So there's two main hormones, without giving everyone a biology lesson, but there's two main hormones that to be considered, estradiol and progesterone. And they increase and decrease at certain times in the hormonal cycle. And when both hormones decrease together, that's when the uterus lining breaks down. And because it's a very blood-rich lining, it breaks down and is excreted as what looks like blood, and there's cells and all sorts of other things there. The important thing is that a period happens because of those cycling hormones, and anything that interferes with that is going to be interfering with the buildup and the breakdown of the lining of the uterus of the womb. So if you take an oral contraceptive pill, for example, which is designed to interrupt and interfere with that cycling hormones, you will not be having a period when you have your withdrawal bleed. We call it a withdrawal bleed. So some people take their oral contraceptive pill packet after packet after packet, so consecutive packets continuously, and they may not have any bleed whatsoever. And some people actually commonly take 3 weeks of tablets and then a week off. And during that week off, they will have a withdrawal bleed. And it's because of the removal of those exogenous, those synthetic hormones that they've been given. And that withdrawal bleed is often lighter than a normal period, may not have the same symptoms as a normal period, and is often a bit shorter. So we wouldn't call that a period, because the body is not going through the same hormonal cycle as when it's a natural cycle. So it's difficult for people who are taking oral contraceptives or continuous progesterone using an implant or something like that, for them to know exactly what their body is doing, because they are interrupting their cycle. And so having a bleed does not tell them that everything's okay. It just tells them that they're withdrawing from the hormone.
Okay. And often in sport, there was perhaps a myth kind of bandied around that if you didn't have a period, then you were perhaps training hard enough. Is that a myth? And is that something that athletes should be worried about, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I've lost count of the number of times I've been told that. And I've been told it by athletes from very young, 15, 16, 17, through to 50, 60. Historically, it was definitely
the opinion of some athletes that that was a sign, an indicator that they were training hard enough. Unfortunately, having no period is always a sign that something's not right, because periods are an indicator of health. So if that period isn't happening, assuming that you're not taking a hormonal preparation, it is an indicator of suboptimal health. It means your health is not as good as it could be. And if we're talking about elite athletes, they need their health to be as good as possible to be able to achieve their optimum performance, their best performance. So if there is no period, that usually means that either there's a medical reason for it. So pregnancy would be a common reason, not that we would call that a medical issue, but it's obviously a reason. And that would be the first thing that we would look at if somebody came to us and said, when I've not had a period for 3 months, we would inquire whether they might be pregnant and do a pregnancy test. Assuming that wasn't the case, we would investigate to make sure that there wasn't something like a large ovarian cyst or some other reason why, a hormonal reason why their periods had stopped. The commonest reason for periods to stop is that athletes are underfueling. It's not okay. That there's a serious medical problem. The commonest problem is that they're not having enough fuel. In those situations, what happens is the body tells itself that they haven't got enough fuel for all the functions that the body needs. So it needs to start saving energy. So it starts switching off non-essential functions. And the whole point of these cycling hormones is to, in case the woman is going to reproduce. And that's not an essential function. Essential functions are that you've got enough glucose, enough energy going to your brain, to your kidneys, to your liver, to your heart. So your body will switch off your fertility. So often that happens early, but there are indicators earlier than the period stops. And it might be an increase in injuries. You might have an athlete who isn't sleeping well, becomes anxious or depressed. It could be an athlete who is getting recurrent illnesses, and they can be the first indicators long before the period stops. And in those situations, we should always be identifying whether the athlete is fueling enough for what they're trying to achieve, what their body is trying to do.
Okay. And we've talked obviously a lot about hormones, Rich. How do they vary, and what happens hormonally during a cycle?
Okay, so across a typical cycle, just say, 28 days there or so is a typical average cycle. You know, starting on day one, both estradiol and progesterone are low. But as the cycle continues towards kind of the halfway point, estradiol and other hormones like follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone kind of begin to increase and to start the process of ovulation. And roughly halfway through the menstrual cycle, ovulation will occur. And at that point, estradiol kind of drops off again. And as ovulation happens, progesterone starts to increase. And as progesterone increases over the next kind of week or so, you get a gradual increase in progesterone, which is preparing the uterus for fertilization, essentially. And then if fertilization doesn't occur, progesterone starts to fall away. And as progesterone starts to fall away, the uterus starts to kind of shed its lining. And as Anita explained earlier, that is essentially what happens when you have your period. It's the lining, the endometrium, the lining of the uterus that kind of sheds away, and you have your period and the cycle starts all over again.
It's worth mentioning that the day one of that cycle is the first day of the period. It corresponds with the first day of the period.
Okay. And at what point or which hormone is influencing the dreaded kind of PMT during that cycle?
So I mean, and Anita will probably be able to explain this better than me, but as progesterone starts to fall away, it's the change in the levels of progesterone prior to day one of the cycle and the period starting again. It's the change in that hormone that's been associated with the symptoms of PMT and kind of negative emotions.
Yeah, asking for a friend, obviously.
What's quite important is the balance between estrogen and progesterone. If you look at the hormonal graph, estrogen is higher in level than progesterone until the point at which they start, the estrogen starts coming down, and then the progesterone starts coming down a little bit slower. So actually that balance between progesterone being slightly higher than the estrogen is one of the impactors on those symptoms that people experience, which can be really troublesome. PMT can be really troublesome for any woman, but particularly for athletes if they're trying to perform at their best.
And obviously one of the most common symptoms we hear about is obviously period pain. So how or why does that occur, and what can we do about it, especially for athletes, to kind of perhaps enhance that period in terms of performance?
So effectively what's happening is
ischemia, which is when there's not enough oxygen going to the muscle. So as the lining of the uterus breaks down, it reduces the blood flow to the lining of the womb, to the womb itself and the muscles of the womb, and that creates this cramping feeling. So it can be compared in terms of pathology to a heart attack, which explains a little bit more why it's as painful as it is, because that's the same thing, that you haven't got enough oxygen going to your heart muscle and that causes pain. So that's the process. Now, the interesting thing with period pain is that if you talk to most women who get bad period pain, they only take anything for pain when it gets so bad they can't cope with it. They don't preempt the pain, even though they know they're going to get it. It's almost like it's a badge of honor to tough it out. And the best way to actually control the pain is to start taking an anti-inflammatory, if you're able to take anti-inflammatories, or painkillers if not, almost the day before you're expecting the pain to start. And then to take it regularly for the number of days you normally get the pain. Usually, for most women, it's the first day or two. And then to stop. Whereas often when you talk to athletes about what they take for their period pain, they say, oh, well, I try not to take anything. And you say, why not? Oh, well, I don't really like taking painkillers. Yeah, but you're in pain. If you had a headache, would you not take a painkiller for it? I mean, I don't know many men who wouldn't take a painkiller if they have pain. And yet somehow women feel like they shouldn't, particularly around this menstrual cycle, which is just a regular thing that happens to them. So they should just put up with it. And actually the best way to manage it is to take anti-inflammatories or painkillers early, to take them regularly, and to take them throughout the time that you might suffer.
So obviously, other than anti-inflammatories and painkillers for periods, what other products are perhaps available to athletes to help them through a period?
So are we talking about for period symptoms or just managing the period generally?
Both, let's say.
Okay. So one of the things if we're just talking about period pain, first of all, one of the things with period pain is exercise does help. So if you're an athlete who feels like I can't train because I've got pain, it's worth remembering that actually exercise does help. And if you're an exercising woman who's not an elite athlete and you're tempted to curl up in bed with a hot water bottle, even a brisk walk will make a difference. So it's definitely worth exercising if you do get period pain. In terms of other things, there's lots of things that can help. And I think if we're talking about sanitary products, getting the right sanitary product for your sport and your body is really, really important. Some athletes or some women even would use sanitary pads, but if they're in a swimming costume, that will not necessarily make it very easy for them to train because the pads get soggy. So they might need to think about a tampon or a moon cup instead. And moon cups are new since I was starting my menstrual cycle, but they're certainly more eco-friendly. A lot of athletes seem to like them, and it's certainly something to consider that they can be changed and washed out and reused. So those are some of the things to think about. In terms of one of the issues that athletes often are concerned about, particularly if their outfits when they're competing are skimpy. So you yourself will have experienced that situation where you're in, you know, maybe a pair of hot pants or in a tennis skirt with white underwear. It can be a concern to athletes about whether they might leak and they might therefore show bleeding in their costumes. Now, there's more recently, it's been really good. Companies have developed period pants, which have a degree of absorbance in them. And it used to be that you could only get big period pants, a bit like urinary incontinence pants, which were never very attractive. However, companies have recognized that just because you're having a period, it doesn't mean you necessarily want to wear huge, clumpy, unattractive pants. And there's all sorts of different shapes and sizes now that can fit under leotards and things like that. Within the Institute, there's a piece of work going on with some of our sports around making outfits that actually have that absorbency in them, so that it can take away some of the concern about when you're competing, am I going to leak? Do I need to rush to the toilet to change my sanitary product? Is everybody going to know I'm on my period because I've got a big pad in? And some of those things that athletes worry about. For the general population, I think that they're a really good product as well for people to consider using. Because again, if you're running a marathon, it may only be that you're running a local marathon, but it's still 26 and a half miles is a long time if you are having a period.
And specifically for the kind of athlete population, I remember being an athlete a fair while ago now, but during my period, in terms of how it affected my performance, I'd certainly water retain much more. So I'd feel heavier and more sluggish. I was definitely more accident prone. And if I probably linked when I would suffer with injuries or niggles or flare-ups of injuries, it was certainly around my period. What do you find perhaps the slightly more unusual kind of symptoms or performance issues you get with female athletes? Both of you, you've probably worked with various different female athletes and perhaps helped them around their period. What have you found mostly and what have you done to help? I'll start with you, Rich.
So yes, I mean it's a good question. I think the biggest thing that I've learned specifically, and the biggest thing that I've seen, so without talking about individual athletes per se, is the individual nature of it. So for some individuals, for some athletes, they can be hugely affected, firstly by their menstrual cycles, but also, you know, more specifically around the time of their period, they can be hugely affected by that. But there are also others who it doesn't matter to, and it has no influence on them, you know, whether they're training or when they're performing. So I think that the biggest learning for me has been the ability to understand the individual nature of periods and menstrual cycles in general, and how it affects individuals in completely different ways, even if they're in the same team. Even if they're in the same boat, you know, doing this very similar training, doing eating very similar things, they will be affected in many, many different ways. And I guess it's our job to understand that better. And it's certainly one of the things that Anita and I have been working hard across the Institute to try and understand the individual nature of some of the things that we're talking about, and to how to be much more precise with the support we give people.
And Anita, have you had any kind of unusual symptoms that have really affected performance with any female athletes you've worked with?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of whether they're unusual or usual or not, I suppose because I've seen so many and all of them more than once, I would say they're all usual. But you talked about coordination. That's not an uncommon issue that people don't necessarily relate to their period. I've had athletes that say the only time they can't park is when they're premenstrual. If you think about, you know, the rest of the time they can, and then they suddenly can't. And if you relate that to maybe an athlete who's steering a bobsleigh, that's actually quite a significant issue for them. And again, if you think about hand-eye coordination, I've had athletes who said that they can't get the key in the door so easily. It's just a minor thing. But instead of going straight for putting the key in the door, they miss it a little bit. And if they were an archer or a shooter, that tiny change in coordination will impact on their ability to perform. You talked about water retention. Now, that may be an issue around how you feel because you feel a bit heavier and a bit more sluggish. It could be an issue around where the way the athlete looks or think they look. And I've had athletes complain about that, that when they look at themselves in the mirror, they don't feel like they're an athlete. They don't feel elite because they see that they're heavier and a bit bloated, whereas, you know, athletes are lean and strong and slim and in their heads. So then they go to work, either their sport, not believing that they're an elite athlete. And that has an impact on how they can then perform psychologically. But it's also an issue if you're in a weight-making sport. So there's the aesthetic, but if you're a judoka, for example, or a boxer where your weight, you're judged by, you know, you compete in weight categories. If you're bloated and you've gained a couple of extra kilos because of water retention, you may not make your weight, whereas the week before you would have made your weight. And that's a significant issue for athletes that are in that situation. And they need to, one, identify those problems that may affect their performance by tracking the symptoms that they experience against their performance, and then work with their teams, work with the people around them to try and mitigate against those, because the hormonal changes will happen. But it's like, well, how do we mitigate against that? There are situations where athletes, because they're less coordinated, they're more likely to get injured. So, for example, there has been some mixed evidence around cruciate ligament injuries. There definitely seems to be that women are more prone, but there's also some suggestion, albeit that it's not a clear link, that certain times of the menstrual cycle may affect that. And if you've got an athlete who knows that she gets injured more often or is more clumsy, then there are things that she can do around her warm-up to try and kind of upregulate her coordination a little bit before she does her training or her sport. But the first thing we need to do when working with the athlete, and I completely agree with Rich, it's about individualizing that support, is recognizing in athlete A, in that sport, these are the conditions around the sport that are important. These are the skills they need. This is the strength they need. You know, these are the outfits they have to wear or the weight that they have to make. And how are they affected? And how can we then support them to be able to get to peak performance?
As an athlete, I'll take myself back. So imagine, it takes some imagining, but imagine I am preparing for the Olympic Games next year. And I know through using perhaps a tracking app that my period was going to land exactly on the day of the Olympic final. And I came to you saying, you know, I've got this big problem. What should I do? What would you recommend to an athlete in that situation?
So first of all, you know, the important thing is to work out whether that is going to have an impact on that particular athlete. So for some athletes, when the day their period starts, they actually start feeling better. So provided they've got adequate sanitary protection and they're not concerned about that, or they've got the period pants or whatever it is that they can obtain to help them in that respect, then they may need to do nothing. And we shouldn't be afraid necessarily for athletes to have periods while they're competing. And there's certainly athletes that have come out and said that they've competed incredibly well during their period. So the assumption can't always be that it's a bad thing. If an athlete says, actually, my period does impact and it does concern me, there's a number of things for them to think about, but most of them involve interrupting or interfering with the period. So changing when the period might happen, and usually involves hormonal manipulation. So for example, what they might be able to do is start taking the oral contraceptive pill or using a Myrina coil or another preparation that actually stops their periods. The most important thing that I would say is, and the key thing you said, which made my heart sing, was that you're talking about the Olympics next year. And the reality is that often athletes realize, because they're not been tracking their periods and they don't recognize until 3 or 4 weeks before, or sometimes if they're unlucky, it may be that they're surprised the period comes a bit early. And that's a bit more difficult, because the hormones that you might give somebody or the medications you might give somebody to stop their period or make it lighter during the period or very close to the period can make the athlete feel worse than if they had the period itself. So my advice to athletes is, you know, the Olympics and Paralympics are 4-year cycles. Obviously, that's not the same in other sports, but in the world that we work in, it's a 4-year cycle. You can predict when your major competitions are. And if you know what your menstrual cycle is, provided it's reasonably regular and not everybody's is, You can predict if that's going to happen way ahead or it might happen, and start thinking about it early, having plans, having the conversations, and determining whether it's going to be impactful. Sometimes athletes say, I'm worried my period makes me slower or weaker or less accurate. But actually, if you look at their performance data, it doesn't confirm that. And even for an athlete, knowing that can make them more confident competing during their period. So again, that requires us to rewind several months to be able to do that work, to work with them, say, well, look, you know, your performance data doesn't confirm that actually your period has an impact. So do you still need to try and delay your period or stop your period? Or knowing that bit of information, can you still compete during your period?
Great. So before I let the two of you go, I want to bust some myths around periods. So you can give me a true or false, or perhaps briefly elaborate if you need to, but I'll ask you some quick fire questions. So Anita, firstly, true or false, activities like exercise should be avoided around your periods?
If you just want one word, then false. But no, definitely exercising around your periods can help. But there will be some people, for example, who have significant blood loss where they may need to modify their activity or address the underlying heavy periods.
Okay. And Rich, your period should last exactly 1 week each month.
False. So periods can kind of last anywhere between kind of 2 and 7 days. The average is probably somewhere between 4 and 5.
And Anita, PMT is all in your head.
Absolutely false. It can impact on your head. So it can certainly affect your mood and your confidence and create anxiety. But the hormones definitely have an impact on your brain activity and how you feel. But those symptoms are not imagined.
And Rich, can exercise help with cramps?
Yes, it can. So in most cases, if someone goes and exercises, it may make them feel a little bit better. It may help break down the lining, which will kind of alleviate some of the cramps. For others, the cramp might be too debilitating to go out and exercise, but for most, it may well help.
And Anita, we shouldn't really bother talking about periods.
Well, clearly false, otherwise we wouldn't be doing this. I think probably one of the most impactful things that has happened over the last 12 to 24 months has been that women have started talking more about periods. They've been forcing that conversation, and the only way we're going to understand the impact of the menstrual cycle on health and performance, on exercise, is to be talking about it and understanding better how athletes are affected. So definitely coaches should talk to their athletes. Definitely athletes should feel comfortable talking to their coaches and their support staff.
Great. And very finally, from each of you, I'd love your top one or two, or maybe even three tips on how athletes and maybe coaches can help better deal with periods.
So my number one top tip is to understand your cycle. You can't manage symptoms and the impact they may or may not have on performance without knowing what your cycle is. So it doesn't matter how you track it. You can buy an app, but you can write it in your diary or your training log. It doesn't matter. And then understand, recognize when your symptoms are associated with certain points in your cycle, because then you can start to address them.
I mean, Anita and I are going to say very similar things, but I would say that probably starting with the coach, but creating an environment or relationships within their athlete groups where people feel comfortable talking about all of these things, specifically periods in this case, so that an athlete, if she wants to, can talk to their coach about their period and the influence it may or may not be having, and to just open up the conversation so that if there is something an athlete feels they need to share, that they feel that they can share it, and coaches create that environment and kind of maybe educate themselves so that they are more open to those conversations.
I've got another top tip, and that is not to necessarily believe everything that you read on Instagram or social media. these things can be complicated. They're very individual, and there aren't necessarily rules that suit everybody. Plus, not everything that you're reading is with science based, and therefore not always true.
Great. So Anita and Rich, thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us, Goldie.
And if you enjoyed that episode and found it useful, then we're continuing our conversation around periods in our next episode as we discuss tracking and contraception. So if you don't already, why don't you give this podcast a follow so you don't miss an episode? And you can keep across the latest news from the UK Sports Institute on our socials at UK Sports Inst. That's UK Sports Inst to find out more about the work we do to support peak performance. Until the next time, thanks for listening, and we'll catch up soon.